Hi, I'm Janelle. I'm coming from UC Berkeley, and most of my research has been focused on understanding the demand for gender-confirming healthcare. And that includes everything from counseling, hormones, or surgeries related to confirming one's gender. So today I'm just going to talk to you about one sub-question I have, which is income associated with unmet need for hormones? And so one reason I chose hormones is because that is one of the most prevalent types of gender-confirming care, other than counseling, that the transgender community gets. And as well, income, I chose. Bleh, sorry, I don't know what I'm saying. And I also chose. Sorry. And I also chose to look at hormones because it requires out-of-pocket payments, and that tracks best with income. How do I change the slides? Cool. Okay, so what do I mean by unmet need? People who desire hormones and do not get it. Unmet need can be caused by several factors: inability to pay out-of-pocket costs for hormone therapy, lack of access. There's no providers in the area you live in, fearing discrimination or low-quality care from medical providers. Just talked about that in some of our other presentations, and possibly fear of discrimination from being outed by gender nonconformity. So making your transgender identity more visible by meeting your need. Seems backwards. So the study rationale for this is provision of hormones is inequitable. So insurance companies sometimes cover hormone replacement therapy for things that are not related to gender, and that's just inequitable. Out-of-pocket costs are estimated between $300 to $2,400 per year. That range is really huge, and for many people, they're unable to pay that. Hormone treatment is a medical necessity for some transgender people, and denial of this has been linked to adverse health outcomes. So again, specifically, I'm focusing on: is income associated with unmet need for hormones, and does this relationship differ between M to Fs and F to Ms? Third question is: does this relationship differ between those who are out and not out at work as transgender? And so out meaning people that are open with their transgender identity and in their place of employment. So the data I used was the one that Sari spoke about in the first presentation, and this is the National Transgender Discrimination Survey. Again, it's cross-sectional, non-probability survey. And the data was collected in over 4 months using cluster sampling and yielded over 6,000 respondents in all 50 states. Most of the respondents are actually from the LA and Bay Area. So descriptive statistics. So my subsample was, again, the people who had met need and unmet need. So the people I excluded in this are people who reported they do not desire hormones. So I didn't look at those people in this study. So of those people who desired hormones, a little bit less than a third had an unmet need. They were relatively poor, compared to the general population. I think it's a little bit lower, like 13%. A very well-educated sample, and again, a very predominantly white sample. It's also age representative, and a little bit less than half were out at work as transgender. So I used a multi-level mixed logistic regression model to answer my research questions. So to account for the fact that individuals were not randomly sampled geographically, and we're looking at the relationship between income and health, we may be concerned that those who live in the same areas are more alike on their unobservable characteristics. So by including each person as an independent observation, basically we're going to introduce bias or too much weight. So the sample would look a little bit more like those people who are from California, for example. So I used clustering at the zip code level, And so H sub I Z, it refers to the log odds of having met need for hormones. And I look at specifically income, and I use four quartiles of income, and also education and age. And in model one is my full sample, so it's all the participants we talked about. In model two, it's those who are out at work. Model three, those who are not out at work. Model four, M to F, and model five, F to M. And I've also run these using interaction terms, but it's much easier to present things when they're separate models in a presentation. Okay, so my results for all participants. So in model one, I want to orient you to the column one up there. We see that, and this is the adjusted odds ratio of having met need for hormones. We have a 32% higher odds of met need for people making $20,000 to $40,000 compared to our reference group, which is under $20,000. However, those numbers look a little bit noisy across the income groups. You'll see that they're significant, and then the next range is insignificant. So that was sort of problematic. So I wanted to be sure, this is what's actually happening. So I used some post-estimation techniques, which basically just accounted for the small cluster sizes. Most of the cluster sizes only had one person. So I kind of like borrowed a little bit from the main model. So what I found is actually, when I did this bootstrapping method, that's in 1B, the income groups were not significant. So I found no effect. However, our covariates, education and age, remain statistically significant. As expected, being more highly educated leads to a higher odds of having met need for hormones. The age effect is actually quite small and can be interpreted as someone who is 30 has a 4.2 higher odds of met need compared to someone who is 20. My next model, I discuss the results for out at work. Again, we're looking at the adjusted odds ratio of having a met need for hormones. That's what you're seeing there. So for those who are out at work and not out at work, our covariates age and education again remain significant in both models. As you can see in column two, all income groups are statistically significant for those who are out at work. Those who make $70,000 have a 70% higher odds of met need compared to those who make $20,000 or less. Now, the income gradient doesn't appear strong, which may be because people are willing to pay high out-of-pocket costs. And even maybe $100 or $200 may be manageable for people who feel like they really need this. Except for a reference group, under $20,000, that might not be a cost that they can pay. Again, I understand that this is capturing other things other than just income, but this is one explanation I have, and I'd appreciate your input after as to what else might be going on. So we see something interesting going on with the wealthy group. Now, again, we're looking at model three. With the wealthy group, so that's highlighted in red, for those who are not out as transgender, so those who make $70,000 or more somehow seem to have a 35% lower odds of having met need compared to those who make $20,000. At first, this seemed just weird, unexplainable. Then I thought about it, and I think what's happening is that those who are wealthier and not out as transgender fear that meeting their need will make their transgender identity more visible and possibly lead to discrimination and possibly job loss. It's one explanation. So now my results by gender identity. So as you can see in column five, we have the results for F to M population. We see evidence of a fairly strong income gradient in this group. However, again, in column four, in the M to F group, we see no significance up until the $70,000 and above group. And those people have a 60% lower odds of met need. I think what's happening again is a similar mechanism. People who are, it's the making their gender identity more visible. That's a problem. I'm open to explanations. I'm still a little bit confused about what's going on here. So my takeaway points are that For all transgender people, there is no evidence right now that I've been able to find that income is associated with unmet need. Income may be associated with unmet need for white F2Ms. Again, this population had a very small population that was not white. So we, again, need more research to collect that data. And the perceived discrimination environment may be a greater barrier than out-of-pocket costs. Still confused about what exactly I'm finding, but I would love to hear your comments after. Thank you to Fenway and to the people that put together this data set so I could do a secondary analysis. Thanks.